Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, January 18th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
You miserable, cowardly, wretched little caterpillar.
I think you'll change your tune when you discover what a delightful show is in store for you today. We continue the Erotic Mind series by chatting with an enormously prolific author of just about every kind of erotica out there. I am pleased to welcome the oh-so-charming Rob Rosen.
Go away, you frighten me.
Boy, this is a tough crowd. Rob is the author of two critically acclaimed novels, Sparkle, the queerest book you'll ever love, and Divas Las Vegas. His short stories have appeared in more than 80 anthologies, and his erotic fiction can be found in pages of several magazines. When does this man find time to sleep? That's what I want to know. Rob will also read from his recently published novel, so you'll not want to miss that. For more of Rob, be sure to visit him on his website, therobrosen.com, or his Facebook page, facebook.com/therobrosen.
Smash it being a straitjacket.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. Today's podcast is sponsored by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have not seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names. Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and the Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you buy. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? Not sure what in Sam hell I'm talking about? Well then, it's high time for you to mosey on over to either the Fleshlight or Fleshjack site and make the discovery on your own. Look for the banner on the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be so glad you did. And ladies, here's a tip. This is the perfect gift for your man. You know how I keep talking about the mutual joys and the important information shared when a couple masturbates together, right? Well, this is the ideal masturbation toy for him. Check it out and see for yourself. I know you will agree, nothing beats a Fleshlight.
Come here, you. Come here. How do they find me?
I was wondering the same thing. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Robin. Thank you for joining us. It's so great to have you here for this Erotic Mind podcast. And we owe a great big shout out to our mutual friend, the wonderful Brenda Knight from Cleus Press, who hooked us up. Would you like to say hello to everyone in the audience?
Howdy, audience, and thanks for taking my Skype cherry today.
Well, someone had to. And
yeah, please be gentle. I bruise easily.
Well, listen, I'd like to get right into it because there's so many things that I want to talk to you about. And the first thing is I've been visiting your Facebook page because I'm like a Facebook fanatic all of a sudden. I used to hate the whole concept. It was like high school with a slightly less acne. But now I think I've gotten into it. And since you and I are friends on Facebook, I've been reading all over your site there, and your Facebook page is cleverly named The Rob Rosen.
Is my website.
Well, there you go. It's exactly that. What struck me first is your author statement. It reads, Rob Rosen is the author of the critically acclaimed novel Sparkle, the queerest book you'll ever love, and Divas Las Vegas. His short stories have appeared in more than 80 anthologies, most notably Mensch, on being Jewish and queer, I Do, I Don't, Queers in Marriage, Best Gay Love Stories, 2006, Truckers, Best Gay Love Stories, New York City, My First Time, Volume 5.
Which everyone can read how I My first time.
You're kidding. Yours, really?
Quite embarrassing. And the funny thing is I'm Facebook friends with that person now.
Oh.
And he's got a celebrity husband. He does not know that he's included in that first time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
How about that? It goes on. The Queer Collection Prose and Poetry 2007. Best Gay Love Stories. Summer Flings. Ultimate Gay Erotica 2008. Hard Hats. Backdraft. A Fireman Erotica. Ride Me Cowboy, Erotic Tales of the West, Cruise Lines, Service with a Smile, Fun with Couriers, Contractors and Plumbers.
Hey, I don't come up with these titles.
Well, we'll get to that, hopefully.
I just write the smut. I don't come up with the titles.
And Frat Sex 2, Best Gay Romance 2007, 8, and 9.
And 10.
And 10.
Yeah.
Get out. And Boys Caught in the Act. His erotic fiction can also frequently be found in the pages of Men and Freshman magazines. My goodness, sir, when do you find time for self-abuse?
Well, there's always time for that. You know?
I know. I'm doing it right now.
There you go. Audience, go ahead and touch yourself. Touch yourself impurely. I promote it. Read one of my stories while you're doing it. Make
exactly.
me more time.
That's right. There you go. So I was going to ask, how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you think you have out there? Do you have any notion?
Yeah, I know. I keep good track.
Oh.
after all these years, you have to.
Exactly.
Let's see. So,
you need
so
a spreadsheet, don't you know?
I have a spreadsheet, don't you know? It's over 300 lines long.
Oh, my God.
Believe it or not. So let's see. Two books over the last 8 years. Like you said, 80-plus anthologies,
uh-huh.
all in print, all available. Well, probably 95% available on Amazon
mm-hmm.
and in bookstores.
Mm-hmm. And Cleus Press for a good portion
and
of
And Cleus Press. I do a lot of writing for Cleus Press, my publisher of my second novel, Divas Las Vegas. I'm guessing probably about 12 of their anthologies. So, you know, if you go to any bookstore, you'll find Cleus Press anthologies. I was just in Denver this week at the Tattered Cover, which is a massive gay bookstore.
Really?
I'm sorry, a massive bookstore with only one shelf of gay fiction. fortunately, my book was on there, and I brought it up to the desk and autographed it. They didn't have to beg or anything. But there was a lot of Cleus anthologies. I was in 5 of the anthologies on that, just that one small shelf, so it was pretty impressive.
Wow, yeah. It must be wonderful walking into a bookstore and finding your stuff there.
I love it. I do it all the time. Any chance I get, I look and I go, oh, I'm in that. And it definitely is an ego boost. You know, for someone who sits in bed and types all day, it's great to get out there and actually see that, you know, my work pays off.
Right, right. I'm a frustrated, unpublished author.
it takes a lot of hardship to get to
so
comfortable.
True. It's absolutely true. I've been hawking this one manuscript for 10 years, and I get stuff back from people saying, boy, this is great, this is really wonderful, this is very cutting edge, and it's certainly needed, but it's not for us.
But, yeah. I mean,
I'll kill you!
All the listeners out there, I don't know, it's really, really sad, because not only do you get these rejection letters, but half the time you don't even get a letter.
Oh, I know.
With the rejection. So that's even worse.
I know. It's so ghastly.
So in addition to my anthological work, big word, look it up.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, I've also been writing for Men and Freshmen and now Defunct 2, which that was my favorite magazine.
Yes.
I've been writing for them for about 5 years, something like 40 issues.
Wow.
And about 50 websites I've written for, literary websites worldwide. Most of that is straight audiences.
No kidding. We're going to get to that, I hope.
Yeah.
I am sorry to have seen 2 go away as well, because a lot of the Daddy-O production models appeared in photo shoots, in Unzipped and Freshmen and Men and 2. So,
yeah.
Kind of an interesting thing.
Which are all about to go under a big new quarterly basis on the newsstand cycle, and they're going to be renovated and redone, and there's going to be more online presence. And so if you're not seeing it on the shelf right now, you will again. I think they stopped their current publications in November, but they are going to pick up again, unlike almost all of the other magazines, which won't in 2010.
Yeah. Along with a lot of the gay newspapers. And
that's true. It's true. It's very
tough
hard
times, huh?
Yeah, very. But you, if you're smart and you look online, there's a lot of ways to promote yourself, and there's a lot of way to be, lots of ways to be read if you just know where to look.
Right. So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
I fully intend to.
You better.
Not the second, but I will, I promise.
All right. So before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Is Rob Rosen your real name or a nom de plume?
Oh, God, it's my real name.
Get out, really?
You know, out of all the questions I get, that's the one everybody asks.
Is that right?
Well, they know I write smut, so they figure, oh, well, I wouldn't do it under my own name, but screw that. I mean, I want
besides
everyone to
know. Rob Rosen sounds like a great porn name.
There you go. But no.
So you wouldn't even have to
say it. No.
Don't go there.
Just be alone at my typewriter.
I see.
I know a lot of people who do write under their pen names.
Yeah.
I never would.
Uh-huh.
I'm proud of what I do, and my mother's proud of what I do.
Oh, cool.
She knows what I do. Every time I go visit her, she says, you know, have you written any porn lately? With a big smile on her face. So I have no problem. But another little tidbit for the listeners out there, a lot of gay erotica is written by women,
yes,
straight women, and they do write under pen names.
Yes.
Most publishers won't take a female name for an anthology. And anytime you see a name that's initials, like for instance, J.K. Rowling, who was not J.K. before her books came out,
mm-hmm.
She was told she had to because she didn't think
right.
male audiences would read a female science fiction fantasy writer. So anytime you see gay erotica with initials, that's a woman.
Mm.
And plenty of the powerful people in erotic publishing are women.
Yes.
But not me. All male. I'm touching myself, truly.
Too bad we can't have smell-o-vision.
There you go. No, I shower today.
Just for us. How wonderful.
Yeah.
So can you give us a brief bio?
I think you read it already.
Oh, yeah?
It's go to my website, folks. It's I have all my printed works on there. They're all for sale, and it's pretty big. I've been writing for 10 years. It took a long time to get to where I'm at and a lot of hard work, but it's definitely been worth it.
Where did you grow up?
Let's see. I was born in Brooklyn,
uh-huh.
Jewish Mecca.
Mm.
And then moved to New Jersey, then then South Carolina,
then
Atlanta for 13 years, and now California for the last 13 years.
Yeah, and you're in San Francisco, I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Gay Mecca.
I'll say.
There you go.
Yeah, I used to live there in the Bay Area for almost 30 years before I moved here to Seattle, and that was 10 years ago. So what was I going to say? How did you get your start as a writer then?
Well, I'd always been a reader of gay fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Since back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was, for all you people who are around then, there was a big it was a boon time for gay publishing,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was publishing gay novels, and the straight publishers had their own gay wings, and there was dozens of gay publishers out there, and there was new novels coming out every week. It was fantastic, and for someone like me in the early 20s that had, you know, had just recently come out, reading gay fiction was awesome, and I loved it, and I read 2 to 3 gay books a week. But also, as someone in their early 20s, most of the stuff that was out there was written by people much older from a different generation, and I personally didn't connect with a lot of what was being written back then.
Interesting.
You know, not to say I didn't enjoy it, but I did,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
But it's hard to connect with someone who's in their 40s. That's a very different, growing up in a very different society as I was when I was in my 20s, obviously.
And you're talking specifically about fiction as opposed to nonfiction, right?
Right. I only read fiction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Pretty much. Maybe like The Naked Civil Servant was like the only thing I read that was, you know, nonfiction.
I see.
But I thought at the time, okay, I'm reading all this. I think I can do it. It was something that I felt inside of me that I just had a feeling that there was a budding author in there.
Wow.
And but then again, this was the early 90s, and there was no computers. There was no way I was about to sit there and try to do something longhand or on a typewriter, because I'm way too lazy for that.
Mm-hmm.
So about 10 years ago, I got my first home computer, and I started writing, and I've never stopped writing since. From that very first day I got the computer, I started writing my first novel, Sparkle, the Queerest Book You'll Ever Love, as you said. Mm-hmm. And I published it with a print-on-demand publisher, now called Author House, which is one of the two big print-on-demand publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it out there, and 6 months after I started writing my book, it was ready, and 9 months later, 9 months after I started writing my book, the book was on the shelves and available on Amazon. It was crazy. And you know, I wrote a book, and there it was. And then I set up my own tour up and down California, and I promoted the hell out of myself. And it was a good seller, and it was reviewed nationwide, pretty much in every state it was reviewed.
No kidding.
And that's how I got my start. And then I started writing for the websites, and I started writing short stories, and I didn't see it in me to write erotica, and there wasn't really any calls for anything that was non-erotic at that time. So I just wrote short stories for a straight audience, and I've been published in India and New Zealand and Canada and the UK and all over America. And
what were the topics if it wasn't erotica?
Just general fiction.
Kidding.
Yeah, just basic general fiction. And I did that for about 3 years, writing for non-gay audiences. And the very first time I wrote for a gay audience, it was from Allison Books. It was their book, Mensch, on being Jewish and queer, two things I know quite well. And I wrote for that book, and it was accepted, and that was the very first time I'd written for a gay publisher and a gay story.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, it wasn't fiction, because it was nonfiction. It was about my growing up gay and Jewish in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I got my start as a writer.
Wow. And then you obviously somewhere along the line added the erotic component to it.
Well, yes. I actually was discovered quite like Lana Turner at Schwab's in Hollywood, you know, only with, you know, without the boners and the blowjobs and stuff. But I don't know. That they say it happened at the counter, but who knows what happened in that bathroom
exactly,
at Schwab's, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I really, really honestly was discovered as an erotica writer, and it started my career. It's a very strange story, but I had submitted a story to for my second gay book, I Do, I Don't, Queers on Marriage, which when it came out, I can't remember, been like 6 or 7 years, it actually won the Lammy for Best Anthology. Mm-hmm. And after that book came out, they had a call for another anthology that was erotica, and they wanted something kind of dark and hot and sexy. And I don't really do dark very well. I'm a total sitcom writer. I like humor, but I thought, okay, well, I had published with them before. I'll try it again. So I wrote another story for them. It was called "Go Fuck Yourself." It's not what
nice
it sounds
day.
Like. Yeah. But it was declined, and they had a website. And I said, well, how about putting it on your website? And they said, okay, well, it's a good story. It didn't fit the anthology, but it fits the website. So they put it on the website, and literally a month later, I had heard from the publisher at Men Magazine, and he said, oh, I read your story. It's on the website. It's Velvet Mafia. For all of you fans of online fiction, it's an awesome website. And would you ever consider writing for Men Magazine? And I said, yeah, why not?
But just this once.
Yeah. Well, you know, Men Magazine has, at that time, I don't know what it is now, but at that time, the the subscription rate for homes alone was 60,000. That doesn't even include what was on the shelf. So, you know, writing for Men magazine, it's a big deal. And then writing for Freshmen at that time had 30,000 at-home subscriptions. So, I mean, it was a lot. At the time, they weren't accepting fiction for Two magazine. That came about 3 years later. So I wrote a story for Men. It was called 3,000 Miles of Ass. And it was accepted like right away. And then a month later, they took my story, Go Fuck Yourself, and it was the longest piece of fiction ever published in the 25-year history of Men magazine at the time. And I've been writing for them ever since. And so literally I was discovered, and I've never stopped writing erotica ever since then. And, you know, if you see any erotica anthology on the shelves, chances are I'll be in it. I mean, I'm probably in 80% of the stuff that's on the bookshelves right now.
Gosh, prolific. It just must flow right from right out of your fingers.
I love writing. And
and you didn't do it as a kid, though.
I didn't do it as a kid. I've always read books. Even as a young child, I've always enjoyed reading. Uh-huh. And I would guess that most authors are like that.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that you are one of the few people who have appeared in this series who did not start writing as a kid. I mean, as a kid, you know, like pounding out, you know, stories or poems or something, as a kid, and then just grew into the more adult kind of stuff. So this is a very interesting kind of thing. So you know, one can blossom later in life, apparently.
And I never even considered writing erotica till someone asked me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even funnier.
Yeah. Wow.
I didn't think I had a story to tell.
Right.
little did I know.
Did you find it difficult?
Not at all.
Not
even a little.
Because a number of people in this series have, you know, confessed to that it was awkward for them. I mean, they've been writing, and then it was awkward to start introducing words that they had heretofore never put on paper or into a computer.
You mean like ropes of man sap, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, like that.
Fun. That's fun. And, you know, anytime I think of a new way to say the word dick, I'm thrilled.
It's thrilled. So true.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny thing is that now that 90% of the people that I, maybe even more, 98% of the people that I've interviewed for this series, they said that they now cannot write a story that doesn't have some kind of, you know, sexual overtone to it. So it's a very, very interesting thing. Would you be able to share a juicy tidbit with us now?
Okay, sure.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
It's funny and it's dirty, which is
my favorite things.
That's the best kind of smut, I think. So this is from my new book, Divas Las Vegas, which just hit shelves in November.
Mm. In fact, selling. I have my copy right here.
Ah, you could read along, among other things. But this section here actually has it's done well for me. It's been whenever it gets reviewed, my book gets reviewed, people tend to talk about this one scene. Instinct Magazine had me did a review for me last month, a 4.5-star review, and they brought it up. As did Passport magazine. So I'll read this section. It doesn't require any background.
Okay.
Divas Las Vegas is a murder mystery with a lot of sex, with a lot of drugs, with a lot of drinking and gambling. It's funny, and it's a buddy novel. And but it's hard to read from a murder mystery and not do background. So this scene doesn't really require any background.
Thank you.
So here we go. Oh, can I take some water? Here you go. Hold on. Got a drink. Okay.
Gin, it was like mother's milk to me.
Yeah. Okay. So, we decided on dinner at a nice little Italian restaurant away from the strip and away from the throngs of vacationing straight couples and families. Not an easy task, but there are still hidden places away from the attractions. We sat in a booth in the back of the restaurant. It was dark and quiet, and the air was ripe with desire. Well, maybe I'm exaggerating, but there was certainly some chemistry going on. We ordered a nice bottle of red wine, some tasty appetizers, and wonderfully prepared pasta. Everything was lovely, especially the company. The conversation centered mostly on our backgrounds, upbringing, education, past loves, past travel, you know, the usual first date mumbo jumbo. And with each passing minute, I was growing more and more fond of him. He was nice and easygoing and just plain old normal, something I rarely encountered back in San Francisco. I pictured a life ahead of us, mowing lawns and visiting art galleries. Ah, average suburban bliss. The mood was helped by the fact that he was sexier than hell, that he had a well-paying, steady job, that he seemed to like me, and that his hand was gently stroking my inner thigh. Mostly that last stuff. When he leaned in to kiss me, my heart was racing. My lungs were expanding and contracting wildly. My foot was tapping. My bladder was pushing down relentlessly on my groin. Uh-oh. "Would you excuse me, Marvin? I need to use the restroom," I said, excusing myself. Sometimes your body could be your worst enemy, or your best friend. When I returned and shuffled my behind back into our booth, I peered down and saw that Marvin had undone his fly, and a rather large, rather turgid penis was pointing up at me. "Dessert?" he informed, noticing my wide eyes. "Ah, low in fat, high in protein," I commented, reaching my hand over to gently stroke it, his flesh now pulsing in my sweaty grasp. "I think I'll have the same," he said, indicating that I should follow suit. And I cautiously and carefully did, which was hard to do without calling attention to myself, as my own member was equally stiff. Luckily, my pants had a fly and not buttons, and I deftly removed it without too much fanfare. So we sat there stroking each other's man meat and continued our conversation. If the waiter noticed, he never let on. Not that we care by that point, anyway. I mean, once you have your prick out in a restaurant, you're usually beyond worrying if you get caught. But when he reached across for the butter, that's when I started to get nervous. It was one thing to have a boner beneath the table. It was quite another thing to have it lubed up with pats of Land O'Lakes. Not that it was an unpleasant feeling, mind you. Actually, it felt considerably smoother than my usual bottle of wet. Maybe there was a whole new market for the butter people to conquer, I thought. The ads could read, "Great on any kind of meat, even your own." Still, I would have preferred to be doing it lying on a nice king-size bed with the lights down low and some nice romantic music on the radio, not with busboys removing our dinner plates and silverware. Call me old-fashioned. When he reached over again and applied some to his own thickening stiffy, I knew we had a problem. "Can't this wait?" I suggested. "It could, but we could also have a repeat later," he replied, his breath quickened and raspy. The logic was sound, though it lacked a certain romanticism I was hoping for. "Okay, then. I'm ready when you are," I whispered, mere seconds away from, and then we both shot. At least we did it together. That's sort of romantic, isn't it? Now the nasty part. Cleaning up a lap full of butter and cum isn't easy with your standard dinner napkin, but we managed. Then we threw our napkins to the ground and cleaned up the remaining mess using our shoes. Not exactly the afterglow I had expected from our first time. "That was hot," he whispered into my ear. "That was something," I replied, not exactly sure how I felt about it, but at least I wasn't horny anymore, and that was something. We paid our bill and made a hasty retreat before our little secret was discovered on the floor. I was picturing the waiter picking up our napkins from beneath the table, and in my mind I was singing that classic Parquet commercial, "If you think it's butter, but it's not." "Well, I've never done that before," I said as we got into his rental car. "I know it would have been nicer alone and in bed," he said, "but I've been thinking about you all day, and I couldn't wait any longer. Do you know what it's like to be hard an entire day?" Sadly, the answer to that was a resounding yes. Fortunately, he wanted the same thing I did, so I was starting to feel better about what we had just done. And at least he wanted me just as desperately as I wanted him. That's always nice to hear. "Want to do it again? I have some margarine in the glove compartment," he said. "Well, just joking. Now let's go hear some Patsy." "Okay, but if there's any whipped cream on our daiquiris, stay away from my lap."
I love it.
It's fun. There's dirtier scenes in the book, but, you know, go buy it. Go read it. Go love it.
So as you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. Are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica?
Okay. Well, I've been married for 8.5 years. I'm one of those 18,000 lucky couples in California. Uh-huh. And so, yes, I am living that life. But what sparks my imagination is very easy to write erotica because there's calls for submissions for every anthology, and every anthology has a theme. So if you're writing about plumbers, then there you go. You already have, you know, it's already out there. It's very simple. I already have the framework. Mm-hmm. It's given to me by the editor of the anthology, and I just let loose. In terms of writing for Men and Freshmen and Two, well, Men and Freshmen anyway, that's just something will hit me. I went on vacation to Mount Hood last year, and then I came back and I wrote a story called Hoodwinked, which was featured in Freshmen. Or I'll watch a movie and that'll trigger something, like, you know, give it a turn for the hot, you know. Or
so your mind generally.
As soon as I read the submission, the call for submission, I know what I'm going to write. It takes me 2.5 seconds.
No kidding.
Yeah, I sometimes the whole entire story hits my head. You know, as soon as I read what they're looking for, there's a book coming out by called Unmasked 2, More Erotic Tales of Gay Superheroes, and right away I knew the otter. That's what I wanted to write about. It just, you know, was not difficult. At all. And that's by Starbucks Press, by the way. You're a great publisher of erotica these days. Mm. And I love writing romance. And I'm in all the romance books that have come out from Allison and Cleus in the last 5-6 years, which is...
So what is the difference, I mean, between a romance? Because I've had authors from both genres on this program. And but to your mind, what is the difference between an erotic, let's say, short story and a romantic short story?
Well, I mean, one has pulsing dicks. I mean, you know.
And the other one fades to black
before that happens? Yeah, I think so. I try the vast majority of times to put romance in my work, and I think it sets me apart.
In the erotic stuff.
If you read what's out there, most people just like writing the smut, the middle of the story.
I
really enjoy the beginning and the end.
Right.
And to me, the rest, I'm not saying it's filler, because it's not. I love writing the smut. But I love the chase, and then I love the finding love, and then I love the romance at the end. And I talk to a lot of writers who don't like the romance. They think it's schmaltzy, and to me, I think it's hot. I think romance is hot. I love having that happy ending, and it's reflected in my work. And I think most publishers enjoy it, and they've told me that, you know, you do it well, and we like to have it in our books. Mm-hmm.
So does romance have to have a happy ending?
My stories do. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I am. I've mm-hmm. tried to write stuff that's dark, and mm-hmm. I can't do it. It always ends up with shtick. You know, that's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. And if you read the stuff that's out there in the magazines, it's not romance usually, and mine always is romance. So, I love it.
So when you're presenting, you know, a romantic, erotic kind of thing, you set the scene, you add the erotica, and you conclude the scene. Is that what I'm understanding?
And yes, and hopefully with a twist. Uh-huh. I always try to. I like a little twist that someone didn't see coming, and then the happy ending. Throw the happy ending in there. Yeah.
And when you're writing, like, straight romantic kind of stuff, you downplay the erotic elements, yes?
There's not that much just romance anymore. There used to be. There used to be a lot more call for just romance without the erotica, but it's hard to find these days.
Right.
But with the straight, I'm not saying straight romance, because that's icky, but you missed the pun, straight. But I don't do that. But if I'm just writing romance, then I definitely try for a bigger twist, something that's really surprising, and then the happy ending.
I see.
Yeah.
So you are clearly working in at least two different kinds of presentation forms, and one is the short story, and the other is the erotic novel. Most of the erotica that I read is very brief and powerful. And because of its brevity, every word must count. But your erotic novels are different from that. Is the same thing true? Does every word need to be count in both kinds of work?
Well, you know, when I'm writing my short fiction, the erotica is the meat, so to speak, of the matter. It has to cover 80% of the story. I like to have like a good amount of background. I like to have a nice beginning. I like for people to get involved. But in erotica, the editor doesn't want too much, you know,
right.
Additional. Yeah, they don't want. Yeah, exactly. Foreplay. They don't really want it. If you're not there in the first 300 words, you're not going to get in the book.
No kidding. Interesting to know.
Yeah, and especially in Men and Freshmen, I've submitted stories and then gone to read the magazine, and it's like, uh-oh, where'd the beginning go?
So, because this is what we generally call like one-handed fiction, right?
Yeah. And okay. For those of you out there. Here's another little tidbit. A lot of gay writers do not want to write for the magazines because the stories are edited.
Right.
When you read an anthology, the stories have very little editing. The writer did most of it. The editor will, you know, fix problems, but not add or delete words.
Right.
But in the magazines, the editor does.
Yeah.
It can be heavy-handed. Sometimes my story is only 80% of what I submitted.
No kidding.
That's fine. I mean, I'm fine with that. It's got a big readership. It's never for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't always pick the words that the editor picked, you know, but that's fine.
Interesting.
But it's the reason a lot of writers won't write for the magazines, because they don't want to be edited that way.
Right. Well, on that note, sir, I must call attention to the fact that we are... run out of time for today, and yet I have way too much stuff to ask you to let you go without a promise that you will return next week. Will you?
Promise. I'm crossing my heart. You can't see it. It's a tiny heart, but it's there, and I'm crossing it.
Black heart.
With my free hand.
And will you promise to read again?
I promise.
All right.
Something dirty.
Oh, good. All right. All right. Good, good. So before we go, would you give us your website address and walk us around a bit before so we can visit you in the intervening week?
Sure. Well, you can visit me on Facebook, obviously, and I'm under The Rob Rosen, as you said. I accept all friends. I love reading what other people are doing, even when I don't know them. And my website, which I've had for 10 years, is 10 years,
wow.
Yes. And it's still the same one, just much bigger. It's www.therobrosen.com. And a lot of my free... short straight fiction is still on there for the live sites, and all of my erotica anthologies are for sale on there. And yeah, you can see my whole history on there. And all of my reviews for my books, and lots of pictures and lots of fun stuff on there.
Great, thank you so much, sir. And between now and then, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Can't wait.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Pretty wonderful show, huh? Well, tune in next week for part two of my interview with Rob Rosen and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
May I speak to you for a minute?
That'll have to wait until the show is over. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Fleshlight and Fleshjack. Say, guys, have you been looking for the perfect gift for yourself? A gift that will give you hours of fun and pleasure and never run out of batteries. Well, I have just the thing for you. Once you've tried a Fleshlight, you'll never settle for second best. You know all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse? Well, here's a tip. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response, and last for as long as you'd like, takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer simply using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It is just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice with this puppy, you'll be able to train yourself to last longer, to gain control over your ejaculatory response and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old U.S. of A. Look for the links to these amazing resources right there on the sidebar of DrDicksSexAdvice.com.
That's it, baby! When you got it, flaunt it! Flaunt it!
That is so true. Listen, sex fans, one more thing. I hope you're following my other two interview series, which appear on Wednesdays. One is called the Sex Education Series, and I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles, and we investigate the world of fetish, sex, and kink. The other is called Sex Wisdom. Here, I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. I can assure you that these conversations will be well worth the time you spend with us. Look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.